Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 94. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And we got a whole bunch of shit for you this week.
Like literal
and,
shit.
Yeah, just not good. We're sacrificing ourselves for you, so you don't have to sit through them. Yeah, we're kind of, we're going to wing it like fucking Donald Trump in the debates. We're just going to go for it. I guess I'll throw it to you first, Chris. I know you saw at least three movies. Give me one of them. Well,
I saw more than three, but we'll talk about three here. So I'll bring up the three kind of big name ones. The crossover here, we do game podcast, Perfectly Sane Show. One of my favorite game franchises, Ratchet and Clank. It had a movie earlier this year that kind of came and went. It came out with a game attachment as well. Just play the game. Let's put it that way. Cause this animated feature, is not good. my kids were bored with it, which is, that's, you know, when it's an animated movie, if even the kids can't get behind it, there's something wrong there. But it basically follows this Lombax named Ratchet. It's kind of the origin story of Ratchet and Clank. So follows this Lombax named Ratchet. He has thoughts of maybe being a hero someday. He comes in contact with this little toaster robot named Clank, and they go on an adventure and save the universe. That's about it. And if you've played the game, you know the story, because it's basically just one really long cutscene from the game. There's nothing that makes like Ratchet and Clank unique as a game property here. You know, those cutscenes are cool when you're playing the game. They add some like flavor to the pretty good gameplay aspects of that game, but you know, they're good in short 2-3 minute bursts. It's a 90-minute movie and a little over long. So, yeah. I'm going to go 2 stars on that. I don't have much to say. Animation's fine, I guess. I guess there's that. Doesn't look bad.
Yeah, so if you've played the game, you're good.
Yeah, basically.
And it's a very good game. It's not currently on my top 10, but it could very well be there. But yeah, I'm probably going to pass on it.
I would. It's really not worth it. Like, my kids fell asleep watching it. Like, I was like, this is rough.
It seemed like it was like ripe for like a good like animated movie, like,
right,
just based on the games. But even that said, I was never super into the story of the games. I like the gameplay. So I don't know. Oh, well.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, like, the story is nice, you know, flavor to everything.
A platformer.
But when you start stretching it out over 90 minutes, like, it's just not engaging enough.
Well, speaking of not engaging, I guess, you know what I'll start with is one of my number one most anticipated movie of the summer. Didn't come to enough theaters for me to see. That is Nicholas Winding Refn's The Neon Demon. Starring Elle Fanning. And she is she's like 16 years old, I think, in it. And she goes to LA to be a model. And a whole bunch of weird shit happens. Like, really, really, really weird. And I guess it's trying to make a statement about the model industry, like, kind of eating up these young, naive girls who come out to Hollywood. Something like that, I guess. It is fucking terrible. Sad to report. Yeah, it is. I mean, I love Drive. We've talked about this subject before.
Yeah.
I think that you may have been right in that Drive was his somehow like accidental mainstream success.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of an art house film too, but it has like cool action and a cool soundtrack, and I think a cool story. Like, there's something there. There's some mob shit going on. Like, this is like
something interesting, at least. Yeah.
Yeah, like it appealed to people that you might not expect an art house film to appeal to. It was a fun kind of like action movie too, a little bit.
Also, kind of off topic here, but Drive, he did not write Drive. He wrote Only God Forgives, which was the last movie, and he wrote the screenplay and the story for The Neon Demon. So
I did notice that as we were watching The Neon Demon, and I was turning to my girlfriend and saying, like, I'm pretty sure he didn't write Drive, which is maybe why Drive was so much better. I mean, this is just, it's art house, fart house to the fucking extreme. It's boring, dude. It's a very boring, dull movie about, like I said, about how, like, the model industry is vapid and, you know, it has all sorts of these, like, critiques, I guess.
Right.
But for a movie that's, it's kind of ironic that a movie that is critiquing the model industry is so, so devoid of anything really to say. Like, it's as vapid as the model industry. It's fucking sad. I don't even know what to say about the plot. Like, just weird shit happens and more weird shit. And these, like, older models are jealous of her because she's young and beautiful and she's got that, like, something extra that they don't have anymore. And so the older models are, like, kind of like vampires that, like, use her as a fountain of youth or what the fuck ever. It is so incredibly dull with, like, long shots of people just staring and really not having anything to say. Really kind of corny dialogue that's trying to make points. And by the time it gets to, like, the horror elements of it, I didn't find them to be shocking or anything, even though I guess objectively some of it is gross. It was just, like, even that stuff, like, even when it gets to the violence, it's boring as hell, I thought, to me. So, yeah, the movie fucking sucked, dude. I wanted to like it. Like, I thought it looked kind of interesting. It has some cool shots, for sure. Like, really interesting shots in it. And it has pretty cool sound, like, score, anyways.
Right.
And visuals are there.
Yeah, that seems to be what he's good at. Maybe he just needs somebody else to write his stories for him. And
yeah, the movie is, it's all style, zero substance, which is, like, I don't know. If you're going to be critiquing the model industry, try not to emulate it. I don't know. maybe as a curiosity. Otherwise, one star, dude.
Oh, that bad, huh?
Unfortunate.
That's
unfortunate.
Damn. Something else that is vapid, and I saw the sequel to the everyone wants to call it the Michael Bay Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but he just produced it. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows, which is the sequel to 2014's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This is a bad movie. I liked the 2014 Turtle movie. It was fun. Like, it's not great, but, you know, in terms of live action, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, it gets the job done. This is bad. It's,
oh, really?
It's not enjoyable at all. There's nothing going on. Just, you know, the turtles just aren't fun. It's Raphael is angry all the time, which, I mean, kind of goes with his character, but it's like retread areas of stuff that we've seen in past turtle movies. Like, Leo has he's not a good leader yet, so he's struggling with that, so he tries to make decisions, but he's more imposing his will on the rest of them, and they're all supposed to be brothers, and, you know, same old themes that we've seen in not just turtle movies, but other movies anyway. And like the action just isn't very good. It's weird because you would think that this is the one that really, this was it. That this is a movie that had Bebop and Rocksteady from the cartoons. It had Krang in it. Like, seems like the one that would be fun and goofy and enjoyable. And it's just it. I shut it off when I first started watching it and was like, I rented this movie. I should at least finish it out. I went back to it and finished the last hour of it, but wow, it's rough. Megan Fox is bad. Will Arnett's bad. Stephen Amell, who he plays Casey Jones. He's at Arrow on Arrow, the show Arrow.
Yeah.
He's not good. Like, it's just really, really rough. Tyler Perry's in it as Baxter Stockman. He's actually pretty funny. Like, just he plays Baxter Stockman, the kind of mad scientist guy, a little goofy, and it works. Rocksteady and Bebop are okay. There's a lot of like shit and fart jokes, and it's just like, all right, maybe this was funny when I was a kid. I don't know, but
that's what I was gonna say is, what if we're too old for Turtles?
Yeah, man. Like, maybe that's it. And then Brad Garrett is fucking Krang. Like, like this is fucking weird, man. Like, and there's this whole like a subplot of the Turtles. Like, you know, there's this ooze that could turn them back. Turn them to human, because I don't think they ever were actually human, but could turn them into humans. And so they have to break into a police station. Like, Raph and Michelangelo are going to break into this police station, and it's this goofy, like, almost like Ocean's 11-esque plot to break in. And it's just like, it's not funny, it's not fun. And yeah, it's rough, and the cops are all after them, and like the cops are like the one lady cop is like why should we trust you? As they're like, well, like they're gonna take on Krang and Shredder, and like then like the city of New York like joins behind them to like the police department joins behind them to fight off these enemies. It's so stupid. Yeah, it's another two for me. I went on a string of bad movies here, so not as bad as evidently what you watched. But
well, I mean, maybe there are, like I said, there's moments of Neon Demon that I thought were neat, but like overall, it was a slog.
Right.
It's funny what you said about Ninja Turtles though, because I thought I heard a lot of people saying like, well, this one's at least better than the last one, and it's like has stuff from the cartoons, like you were saying that like you remember.
Yeah, the stuff from the cartoons is there, and that's why I was like, oh, this one will be pretty good. I liked the first one, actually. Like, yeah, nothing did it for me in this. Like, this is bad all the way around.
Well, a slight confession, I have not seen a Ninja Turtles movie since Secret of the Ooze. I never even saw the third one.
Yeah, was that Turtles in Time or something like that, or...
Yeah, like the one they go to feudal Japan or whatever. Yeah. I own it. I tried watching it once. I could not.
It's really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to throw this out there as a little hot take. Maybe the Ninja Turtles were always lame.
It's possible. It is distinctly possible.
All right. Well, I'll throw out my next movie. And I think maybe some people would be surprised what I have to say about this. But I saw Son of Saul. Which is it was the Oscar winner for best foreign film,
mm-hmm.
Oscars this year. And it is about a guy who is a prisoner in Auschwitz. So it's a Holocaust film. And
so
And he is like, some of the prisoners, they made workers in there. So they weren't like killing these dudes right away. They were like making them essentially kill their fellow people.
Okay.
So it's a story about a guy who sees his son murdered in Auschwitz, and he's trying to find a way to body and give him a proper burial instead of being thrown into the ovens or whatever and burned. I fucking hated it. Like, I did not like this movie at all. Movie, it kind of, it's not one shot or one take, but it feels like that. Like, you're
Okay.
just following him, you're following him around as he goes about his day, and him trying to do this, him trying to like hide the body and find a rabbi to like bless his son, and then like find a way to sneak the body out and bury it, right?
Okay.
And so you're just following, like, you never leave his side. The camera's like always following him around through the whole movie. And fucking annoying dipshit, because everyone around him, they're like secretly planning this uprising to get the fuck out of there, to like get weapons, kill the fucking Nazis, and run away. Like, that's what everyone around him is trying to do, and he has zero help to them, like, because they're like giving him tasks to do, and he's sneaking off trying to do this other thing that, like, I guess I could see why it's important to him, but like, dude, more important shit, like, your son's dead. Like, sorry, that sucks. And by the way, they don't ever explain it's his son to like more than halfway through the film. So you're just supposed to know that it was his son because that's the title of the movie.
Okay.
When he watches the Nazis kill his son, he shows almost no emotional reaction. And he just like kind of like, well, I need to get this, I want to get this kid proper burial. You're like, okay, whatever. Like, just to me, it's a movie where I'm watching it and I want to see about the guys who are trying to get the fuck out of here instead of ignoring everything and not helping anybody so that you could bury your son. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm a heartless fucking, like, I found
Right.
that like incredibly grating. And like, just the movie's just not, I mean, obviously a Holocaust movie is not going to be fun to watch, but it's a slog. Like, you're just mostly just watching them walk around, talk to people, and having conversations that you don't fully understand. And the kicker is it's shot in standard aspect ratio,
Ooh.
which I think that the director did to, I mean, this is a style, this is a way of watching movies that we haven't done in a long, long time now. That way to give you kind of like a feel, like a claustrophobic feel of being a prisoner. But really, it just makes it hard to watch, in my opinion. Like, I'm not watching, I'm not used to watching a tiny little square anymore, you know, like.
Right, it's not how we watch things anymore.
Yeah.
They
It's
don't
a
make
gimmick.
that way.
Yeah, and he's using it here as a gimmick, and I don't know, I guess, because it may be, like, it made just the act of watching the film unpleasant on top of the unpleasantness of the subject matter. But yeah, I don't know, it goes on for fucking 2 hours where almost nothing happens, and like, I hated almost all of it. I did not like where it went in the end. I thought the ending, like, it didn't land the emotional punch it was going for. And like, generally, like I said, I just kind of despise this guy for being so selfish when everyone around him's like, dude, we're trying to get the fuck out of here right now. And you're supposed to be like, oh, but it's so emotional because his son, he wants to bury his son. It's like, I'm just sitting there as like a realist going, dude, your son's dead here. You're not helping anybody, you know? And like I said, he never shows any emotion towards the fact that it's his son. Like, the guy is very emotionless, but he's just so determined to give the proper burial. I chalk this up to like a cross movie. You have to say it's great, and I just don't agree. Like, I don't think that the subject matter automatically makes the movie great. And I thought it kind of sucked. I'll give it 2 stars.
All right. Well,
Sorry, Oscars.
it's not one I'm going to put on my list, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And another one you shouldn't put on your list is Cell,
Oh,
based on Stephen King's novel, about a like this epidemic of almost zombie-ish creatures to a point, that come about from a cell phone communication. This stars John Cusack, Samuel Jackson, who are two pretty good actors. This is a shit show of a movie. It's, you know, we've kind of knew that this movie was going to come out this way, that it was not going to be good. This movie back, I think it was 2008 or 9 when the book came out. There was rumors that, well, for a long time, Eli Roth was attached to it. You know, coming off of Hostel and Hostel 2, like, he seemed like a great choice for this. But he dropped out. Like, it just kind of was in development hell for a long, long time. It finally got filmed. It's just so low budget. Samuel Jackson plays this guy, Tom. He actually, he's pretty good in it. He plays like a subway worker. He's, you know, he's Samuel Jackson. Like, he brings a pretty decent performance. John Cusack is not good in this. Like, he's hardly believable as this character that needs to get home to his son and his wife to see if they're okay. In fact, the whole reasoning behind, like, I get it. Like, you know, he has a son who lives in New Hampshire or wherever. Got to go get him, but he's been away from them for a whole year. Like, he hasn't seen them in this film. He basically abandoned his family, and now all of a sudden, like, the world's ending, and like, oh, I gotta go see him. Like, we're gonna walk to New Hampshire. Really weird. Mm-hmm. There's a couple cool scenes in it. At one point, they at nighttime, all the zombie creatures kind of like they all shut down and kind of have to recharge. And Clay, John Cusack's character, and Tom, they come across this kind of this boarding school or whatever, and the zombies are all basically camping out on their football field, and they run them all over with this car and spray gasoline on them and light them all on fire. And it's a pretty cool scene. But that's about it. Everything else is really, really rough, bad. There's no tension at all. You never feel like they're, like, you know, there's some zombie movies where it's like, all right, you know, people are going to live, but there's some tension to the chases and to being harassed by the horde. There's none of that here. It's like, they don't seem like there's any sort of actual threat from the zombie horde. They never really get into what the zombies are, which, I mean, I guess you can make an argument that in the book, what they are is maybe not as satisfying as, like, King kind of, like, pointed out as some sort of, like, alien hive mind thing. has a writing credit on this. He helped work on the screenplay, I guess.
He needs to stay away from that. He needs to stay away from adapting his own books. That's something I've discovered over time.
He didn't do a very good job. And there might be a reason why. And I like Paranormal Activity 2. This is from Todd Williams, the guy who directed that. But there might be a reason that he hasn't made a film in 6 years. So,
yeah.
It might be because he's just not a really good director. And King working on his own work, as you said, like, not something that he should be doing. It's just not – he's not good at it. So,
yeah, he's great. I love his books, but for the most – I mean, some I don't like. But I've noticed when he gets to adapt his own material for the screen, there's something that doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
It's just – I think it's just a matter of the medium. Like the dialogue and story beats have to feel a little bit different in film than they do in books. And I think he just thinks, well, this worked as a book. This is going to work on the screen. And if you want to see a good King adaptation, we might get to that in a minute. And he does not – he's not writing for it. So
And he's not – I mean, we're going to talk about the one you're currently watching, but he's not writing on The Dark Tower, evidently, the movie with –
that's good.
Matthew McConaughey and Idris Elba. He is evidently not writing on – they're making a and this is probably a year or two out, but they're making a Mr. Mercedes TV series. Nice. Based on the trilogy of his crime, kind of crime horror novels. And he doesn't seem to be writing on that either. So like his stories are adaptable. Like they can be adapted into good things. It's just when he gets in there, it's almost like he doesn't want to adapt them. He just wants the book to be the movie, and that doesn't always work, yeah. Especially in 90 minutes. So
yeah,
but yeah, two stars for Cell. It's just not very good.
I remember liking the book quite a bit, even though a lot of people think it's one of his lesser books, but I remember just reading it going, that was fun. That'll make a great movie. That was a long time ago. And,
it seemed like it was almost written for screen. Like it's very fast paced. It's, I think he wrote that after he had retired. And I don't know. I enjoyed it. I think I enjoyed it more than like Dumickey or Lizzie's story.
Yeah, I did too, I think.
Like it was more like a return to classic horror tropes, and he did it fun. It was a fun book. So yeah, read the book. It's enjoyable. It's an interesting take on zombies. So
do you remember? All right, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but do you remember if the plot of the movie is similar to the book? Like, is it about a guy trying to get back to his son?
Yeah, it is. I think there's better justification for it in the book. Like they characterize Clay a bit better, and when there's more reasoning for why he'd want to get there and see his kid, as opposed to like, oh, he's been away. Like, I don't remember him being like kind of this deadbeat abandonment dad. And that's really, they spend like 2 minutes on it in the film, and they kind of paint it like he's on the phone with his wife or his ex-wife or whatever. And she's like, you haven't seen us in a year. And then like everything goes to shit. And then they never really touch on it again. And he's like, I gotta get to my son. Gotta get to my son. Like, all right. But yeah, I think the book does follow, like, you know, it's a trek from, I believe, Boston up into New Hampshire. It follows it pretty closely, like in terms of plot points, and it's just really condensed and you don't get the characterization because of it. So
I am still sort of curious, but no one has told me this is good. But the fact that you tell me it's a shit show almost makes
it's,
me want to
it's, it. We'll it's bad. Like, I mean, if you want to see something that's interestingly bad, like,
hey, we got October coming up, so
yeah.
Well, I don't want to leave an episode with all terrible shit, because positive a little bit. I did see something good this week, and not just good, very good. It's a brand new Netflix original documentary called Audrey and Daisy, and it is actually about two teen rape cases. And you know, it's tough subject matter, and it's about these girls who they're like, you know, not connected anyways, just two different stories, and the film kind of tries to weave them together.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, in one case, a girl was at a party, she got super drunk and she passed out. She got like drawn on with markers all over the place. You know, people are like writing stuff and pointing arrows to her vagina and this, that, like, not just your normal, like, pass out drunk, someone draws on your face. They're kind of drawing all over her body in places they should not have. And two of the boys started fingering her, and there was video of it, and she ended up committing suicide afterwards because of the ridicule that she got from people at school and on social media. The other story is a girl who, she snuck out of her house to go hang out with some of her older brother's friends. They got her even more drunk, and one of the guys took her to a bedroom, raped her, dropped her back off on her front lawn, like, while it was like freezing outside. She woke up like with her hair frozen to the ground. She did not kill herself. She took him to court. So yeah, that's the two stories that it tells, and it's just a, I think it's a kind of documentary that, like, dude, they should show in high school to warn people what's okay and what's not okay, you know? It really feels like even though the boys in this movie got in trouble, that they didn't learn their lesson about what was wrong about their behavior and just people in general, other classmates in the high schools, but you know, these became bigger news stories, and you have Twitter and Facebook, et cetera, like all sorts of social media reacting to these girls and, you know, calling them sluts and liars. And, you know, it's got to be very tough. That'd be tough for anybody. I would imagine, you know, being a teenage girl, that would be extremely tough. So you can almost see why some of them commit suicide. I don't know. It feels like it's a documentary about pretty important subject matter that I don't feel I've seen a ton on in terms of documentaries. And it's just very gripping and very well done. And, you know, it's on Netflix, so worth watching, I'd say. And I'm gonna give it 4 stars. And I also say an interesting, like, very interesting companion piece to this, which is also available on Netflix, is 30 for 30 Fantastic Lies, which is about the Duke lacrosse players who were accused of raping a stripper. Very different outcome to that story, though. But yeah, I don't know. I just think this is, I mean, it feels like something that's important that people should check out. It's a very good documentary, and like I said, good cautionary tale that teenagers should watch. Movie I've seen this last week, so I give it 4 stars.
All right. You saw some television too, right?
Yes, I did. You know, let's bring it back to something a little lighter here. Stephen King. I've been watching Hulu's adaptation of In 2263, which is a book I haven't read of his. So I don't know if it follows his book super closely, but man, that show is a ton of fun. It's about a guy who meets this dude in a diner who has a portal in his like broom closet that like brings you back to a day in 1960. And this guy wants him to, because he's old and about to die, this diner owner. He's like, so you're a younger guy, I need you to go do this. He's like, I want you to go back in time. And I want you to stop the Kennedy assassination because, you know, if we stop the Kennedy assassination, the world will be so much better now. You will have lived and then, you know, assassinated. Think of all the good Kennedy could have done, blah, blah, blah. Like, premise for a show. Like, and it's very much like, you know, if Back to the Future, like imagine Back to the Future, instead of like going back and trying to save his parents, you're going back and trying to save like history and like make history better. And it's a ton of fun. Like it's like, and because like the portal only goes to like, it's like, I want to say it goes to October 21st, 1960. He has to stay there for 3 years, like in the past, and until he's going to reach that day when Kennedy gets killed. So when the main character, who's played by James Franco, goes into the past, he has to kind of like make a life for himself in 1960. And they have a ton of fun with that. Like, just like he'll be talking to someone and they'll be like, do you serve in a, you know, did you serve in the army or whatever? And James Franco will be like, oh yeah, I did a tour in Korea. And the guy will be like, where are you stationed? And he'll be like, 4077. Weird thing, like he could say things like that because people don't know what the show MASH is. Or like he meets a girl in the past and he's kind of falling in love with her and he starts like tour, which he could get away with as something that like he came up with because she doesn't know who the Beatles are yet. Like it just has a lot of fun with that. It's like, it's not a super serious show all the time. It has a lot of fun and a lot of humor. And I think one of the things that might make it work, I don't know, but I feel like they're not sticking strict to the book. I have no idea. It's just a hunch I have. And I think that James Franco, like this is a big movie star playing a lead in this like miniseries, essentially. Like he is just a fun guy. You know, he's a fun actor to watch, and he makes it more fun. And it, like I said, there, like there's a, the overarching plot of him trying to get, you know, stop Kennedy's assassination. But there's like other like relationships that he develops in the past and other things that he changes. Like for instance, there's a guy he knows who was like his dad, like murdered his whole family as a kid. So he goes to try to stop that from happening. You know what I mean? There's like, there's other things going on besides the Kennedy assassination. I'm not done with it. I'm halfway through. I'll be finishing it probably within the next week. But like, it's a super easy recommend. It's a fun, fun show.
All right.
Which I don't know if you read the book, Chris, or
I have the book. Not. I haven't read it yet.
It's very fun. Like, I don't know if I would recommend you read the book first, but like, this show is an easy recommend to you. I think you'll love it. I'm not going to give it a star rating yet. We'll wait to see how it all shakes out. But like halfway through, it's a fucking high recommend.
Sounds good. I think, did Westworld come out yet? Or
I think that's this Sunday.
Yeah, so I might be watching some of that too.
Oh yeah, I can't wait. It looks incredible. And I'm actually a fan of the movie from the 1974 or whatever the hell it is. Like, this super old movie. I know it's nothing. Like, I don't think they have much in common at all, but I'm excited. Yeah. It looks cool.
So I think they're similar in, at least in concept. So,
yeah. A little bit. The movie was basically like, it was like an early version of the Terminator. It was, you know, robot at a theme park goes nuts and starts killing people.
So, well,
this is sort of like, it has the theme park nature to it, but it's more, it looks like more like a virtual reality type.
Yeah, definitely.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Looks cool though.
The premiere, I guess, is the 2nd. So I'll be watching that. Talk about that next week.
Yes.
Who knows what movie they'll see? Cause there doesn't seem to be anything really coming out in theaters.
I might go see Deepwater Horizon, not because I want to see it, but my girlfriend does. So.
Sounds interesting, at least. Like,
I don't think it looks good, but it's getting good reviews. So, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. And,
but I will have seen The Hunt for the Wilder People for sure by next week, which is a movie I've heard nothing but good things about.
All right. We'll
see.
There looks like there's stuff maybe coming out in October. I want to see The Girl on the Train. Read the book for that. That was pretty good. The Accountant comes out.
Yeah.
You
said Before the Accountant?
Yeah, The Accountant.
No, Before the
Accountant. The Girl on the Train.
Oh, you read the book? You said it's good?
Yeah,
the
book's good.
Okay.
And I like Emily Blunt, so...
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like Jack Reacher 2 is out at the end of October. So there's stuff coming that I at least want to watch. We'll see.
I'm going to make it to The Accountant, I think. I think that looks pretty good.
Yeah, Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
Watch him every day. All right. Yeah. We'll be back next week then.
Movie dudes.